You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Racial inequality in the United States has been a major topic over the last several months, especially because of several high-profile shootings of unarmed African-American men by white police officers around the country, including one in Madison.
Racial disparities are especially stark in the state of Wisconsin and in Dane County in particular. Dane County has some of the highest racial disparities in the country, according to the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. Their Race to Equity report said the distance between African Americans and whites in Dane County is wider than almost any other jurisdiction nationwide, and African Americans fare worse in Dane County than anywhere else in the country.
Reverend Alex G. founded the Justified Anger Coalition to address these racial disparities. On Friday night, the coalition released a plan for racial progress called Our Madison Plan. The report is the product of more than a year's work by Madison's most prominent black professionals and hundreds of other African American citizens.
Reverend Alex G. joins us now to talk about the new plan. He's the president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and founder of the Justified Anger Coalition. Reverend G., welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back on the show with you, too. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, last Friday night was a big night for you, the fruition of a lot of hard work and a personal story for you as well with the unveiling of the Madison Plan. What was Friday night like?
Friday night was like magic. I've been thinking about that evening or that event probably since I wrote Justified Anger in December of 2013, certainly since the town hall meeting in February of 2014, understanding that I had made a call for the need for African Americans to set a table where we can set the agenda and then invite the broader community to come in and help. And I know that when you make a broad suggestion like that in Madison, there's a tendency to step back and say, all right, then do it. You think that there are other ways of doing it, you do it. So I know the community has been looking for what our findings were and what our recommendations were. And to do that with as many people as we did was tremendous. We originally planned for 500 people. We had to bump the seating up to 750, and there were another 150 people standing. So we ran out of food. We had a band, but we had about 900 people in attendance, and I was absolutely floored.
And judging by the tweets of people at that event, yourself included, it sounds like a lot of the people there felt that they were seeing something that felt unprecedented. Was it unprecedented in Madison?
It was. I mean, by the account of many, I believe that it was. There's never been a more extensive snapshot of the African-American community by the African-American community in Madison's history. And in fact, I probably would venture to say there probably has not been a more extensive community-based snapshot of the broader community by any community group in Madison. And because it wasn't just one agency or entity, but people who were from the university and community leaders and ex-offenders and young boys and single moms. It was such a broad swath of individuals who spoke honestly into the process from their own personal experiences. It made it very, very powerful. There have been many efforts that have been designed to address the issues of racial inequality, but they typically start with the mayor, a county executive, governor, and it's governmentally led, but rarely funded. I can name you six of those reports, and actually we named them all in our framework. But this was different. This was grassroots. It was started by an article in response to the Race to Equity, and there were listening sessions, and we got out to the community to listen to what people want. And it made it very, very unique, and I loved the fact that my vision was to bring people so that together for one evening to realize that the enemy is disparity, that we didn't worry about the political factions or whether we're pro-police or pro-African-American males or whether we're on this side or that side of something. I just wanted music and food and an atmosphere to just think about what it feels like to all be on the same team and then to hear a vision that requires everyone to get involved if it's going to be successful, and it exceeded my wildest imagination.
Now, I want to get into the plan, but first, a little bit of backstory. Your Justified Anger piece was the one that sparked this whole coalition and this Madison plan, and that was a piece you published about the struggles that you were coming up against as a black man in Madison. Why did you initially think that Dane County was a place that needed to address some of its issues with race?
I felt that it needed to because it wasn't addressing them. The Race Equity Report was written by wonderful colleagues of mine, Tori Wynn, Erica Nelson, and their team. But the Tipping Point Report that came out by the Urban League in 2009, 2010, talked about some of the same issues. And being a lifelong Madisonian, I watched African Americans who were born in Madison fail while we were blaming this on outsiders from Milwaukee and Chicago. And so I really feel that we swept this under the rug enough, we didn't talk about it enough, and we blamed fringe populations rather than saying we have an issue. We missed opportunities. We didn't diversify quickly enough. We didn't change textbooks. We didn't empower people because we just assumed that we don't see color in Madison. We all know what's best for each other, and you don't let the disenfranchised speak for themselves. That's what the professionals are for. And since Madison is full of professionals, we've thought for other people, and it has backfired, and it has not worked. And so I began to speak up to realize that we need to restore the dignity of individuals who are being most impacted by these disparities by asking them, what do you want? And that's exactly what we did.
And the Justified Anger Coalition plan, it's called our Madison Plan. It focuses on 5 areas. Could you tell us about them and how you chose them?
Sure. We chose them by listening to community activists and by talking with individuals in the community. What has the greatest impact on you? And they chose the 5 areas of education, incarceration, economic development, leadership and capacity development, and family and community wellness because of their interrelatedness. Education pretty well speaks for itself, and so does incarceration. We want to work to stop things that impede the success of men and women coming out of prison, because there are pitfalls that makes it very easy to be caught up in the system and to return to prison, hence the term recidivism. Economic development is different than jobs. Our leaders, our thought leaders, business leaders, say we can't just have jobs programs. We have to create wealth in the African-American community, home ownership, and equity development. And that's very important. With leadership and capacity development, we can't just keep passing resources to predominantly white organizations serving African-Americans by saying, well, we don't have any service providers. We need to build capacity inside minority individuals and their organizations in order to become major players, the way leaders in our community did with Nehemiah, my nonprofit, nearly 25 years ago. And the other area is family and community wellness. What are things that we can do at a grassroots level to stop larger issues of trauma, untreated or undetected mental health issues or developmental disabilities? How can we catch those things in the community and not wait until a child is turned off by school when these issues are found out by the 3rd or 4th grade? And we found that these were interrelated. The community resonated with them. The authorities and subject matter experts agreed on these issues. And that's how we came up with this. This really came from the grassroots up.
Well, to start with education, that was one where one of the main points that's come out of it is to return to neighborhood schools. Now, right now in Madison, a lot of the schools are paired, and that means that there's a more diverse pool of kids at each school. And this calls for going back to neighborhood schools. Why?
Well, because what we found is that this isn't working for our kids. We're finding that the kids who are traveling to other neighborhoods are the kids of color who are doing so at K-1 and 2 when parental involvement is most important. White parents can purchase homes in neighborhoods feeling assured that their young children can walk across the street or 2 blocks away to go to their area elementary school, but that's not true for poor or for people of color. And so we want to look at something that makes it easier for parents to get involved. We believe that our children need the best their best foot forward for K-1 and 2. We want to try something that really gives them a community education experience.
Now, the trade-off there is that it is likely to make schools more segregated in a sense. Why do plan leaders think that that trade-off, particularly for the ages that you're talking about, is worth it?
Well, the what we're calling diversity is not helping our kids. And so are we doing this at the risk of black kids so that white kids can have diversity? Because if you look at special ed, they are segregated. It's black. If you look at dropout, it's segregated. If you look at AP classes, it's segregated. It's largely white and a few other sprinkling of ethnic minorities. And so we can't expect our children to carry the brunt of integrating schools. One of the points I made Friday night is that when integration happened after the national legislature, 35,000 African-American school teachers lost their job. That's a quote that was given to me by Dr. Gloria Ladson-Billing. Now, I believe in integration, but whoever designed that didn't take into account that integration for us meant our teachers as well, because the people who had been our agents of change, our champions, our teachers, people who loved us, didn't come into white schools with us. So no one backed us up when we said these textbooks don't look like us, the teachers don't look like us, the kids don't like us. And so integration has got to be equally bought into by both sides. Whites cannot establish what integration looks like and implement it because it helps. We've got to evaluate this. Our kids are doing worse now than they did before we paired the schools together. So we just want to look at everything that could make the educational process better. And school is not the only place. Let's make it incumbent upon white parents to take the extra step to do things with their children to experience more diversity. Maybe at that point, more parents will ask about diversity of teachers and administrators and textbooks if it really is important for their children to understand diversity.
We're talking right now with Reverend Alex G. about a new report called Our Madison Plan, a vision for racial progress in Madison, just released last Friday night.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think would help to close the extreme racial gaps that exist in many communities in Wisconsin? How do you see these disparities playing out maybe in your everyday life? Why do you think we see these problems here in Wisconsin? What do you think could help solve them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation now with Reverend Alex G. about the newly released report called Our Madison Plan, a plan to help close racial gaps in Madison.
And you can join in with your calls, your observations, your thoughts and questions about racial disparities across the state of Wisconsin. Why do you think we see such big gaps in things like incarceration, educational outcomes, and other measures here in the state? What would help close some of those gaps? How do you see this working out in your community, maybe in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
And Reverend G., to go back to the plan, another idea to come out of the plan is to change access to criminal records. This is a particular interest to potential employers, and this would be some exceptions here for public safety, security. But what is the idea behind that?
The idea behind that is that even before an applicant is able to get to the stage of serious consideration, employers have admitted to employment agencies that they will Google or do a CCAP search on a person's name, particularly if it sounds particularly ethnic. They'll do a search on it before they ever look at the person's application. Now, we're not saying that employers should not have access to it, but it should be used with discretion, and it shouldn't just be open to anyone or just free to anyone just to take a look at it. I'm an employer, so I believe in being safe and taking important steps, but I just think the way it's set up now, it doesn't really help to reintegrate individuals back into the community, and they are returning at a large rate, you know, back to our community each year. I think 600 people probably will return back to our community, to Madison, this year. And if we don't find better ways to integrate them back into society, it becomes an expensive problem to manage, and it becomes a desirable situation on our streets and in our community.
Let's go to our phone lines now. We have Gwen joining us in Madison. Gwen, hi.
I'd like to say that part of the disparity in economic opportunity in the communities has been due to the subcontracting and privatizing of the municipal, county, state, and federal jobs. Years ago, people used to be able to get those jobs. They were union jobs. And you got a decent wage, you got a decent pension, you got some health insurance. And when you allow those jobs to be lost, then the community loses.
Thank you for that call. Appreciate that, Gwen. And what about that, Reverend G? Is subcontracting, loss of jobs, maybe some union jobs, part and parcel of this, as you see it?
I think it is part and parcel. I think it's larger than that. I think Gwen is absolutely right. That impacts the working class. And whenever a class is hit, it hits disenfranchised groups even more. So that being the case, it hits African Americans even more. But when you have too few people of color serving in key management positions or HR positions, employers will say, we don't know where to go, we're applying in the State Journal, we're putting ads in the Cap Times, we're going where we think we can find people. And so they don't know the natural networks for finding people of color, and we gravitate towards people who are like us. We ask people to make those kinds of referrals. And so what's really happening with employment is that many people are being shut out. And then even when they are hired, if there's no real diversity from the board to the upper management to the workers, then you find that people are really the first ones hired into their companies. And so although the companies may have an aggressive recruitment plan, they oftentimes blank out on what you do to change the culture of a professional environment so that you can retain these hires that you make. And so there's some work that I believe that can be done in the community that we can do with employers to do a much better job of having a comprehensive plan for recruiting and retaining people of color.
And we go back to the phones. Now let's take a call from Aaron in Newburgh. Aaron, hi.
Hi there.
What do you think?
Well, I'd like to make a comment both as an educator and as a student. I was an MPS student when busing was first, put into play. And I can tell you that, first of all, the perspective as a student, I can tell you that when you have a racially segregated city such as Milwaukee, one of the most racially segregated cities in the country, when you force segregation, the will, the underlying will to do good for the other really is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that the opportunities aren't there by design because of racial bias. And as an educator, I currently teach in West Bend, and I can tell you that, we have a 5% minority rate. And I can tell you that oftentimes students who are of color and students who are, below the poverty line, they simply don't have the ability to participate in the activities, the after-school activities, the athletics. And certainly they are, I think, again, identified as less worthy of AP classes, less able sometimes, not maybe by design, but just by practice.
Aaron, thank you so much for that call. Reverend G.
I agree with Aaron. I want Aaron to go to mobilizemadison.com and sign up to be one of my volunteers and advocates, because I think she's hitting it right on the head. And anyone can use that, mobilizemadison.com, to either see our plan or to make comments. But she's absolutely right. I think what we've done is cosmetic. And so you have children who are there so that we feel like there's diversity. But then it's difficult to participate in after-school programming. And so when community people say, well, what about the diversity? Our response is, if white parents would be as adamant about inclusion and diversity at a curricular, textbook, and administrative level as they were being concerned with making sure that there are black children in their classrooms, so that their classrooms aren't all white, because many parents don't want to send their kids to an all-white class or school, then be just as vocal on the things that help black kids thrive and not just the things that help white kids to thrive at the cost of black kids' educational experience.
Now, this effort that we're talking about today, it's taken place in parallel to the national Black Lives Matter movement and a growing awareness of racial disparities across the nation. How has that affected our Madison plan?
Well, we certainly see the urgency of it. The thing that we need to note is a lot has happened in our community locally in the past year, but Justified Anger has been speaking to these issues, as has the Tipping Point report or the Race to Equity report, that there are some base issues that we've got to wrestle with, and the nation is realizing that it's not as isolated as we were led to believe. These are huge issues, and we have people who are organizing because we can't lose another generation. And one of the things that makes this very tricky is I gathered on the stage Friday night leaders, again, from nonprofits, from the university, ex-offenders, great people who helped to shape this plan. Even though this is historic, we have to then still convince white philanthropists that this is the way to go. And many of them think, well, isn't this being done by other well-intentioned white-led organizations that are helping to address these issues? And they are doing great work, but there's a difference between having someone speak for you and speaking to the issues directly. And so a big part of our plan is not just saying what needs to happen. We're saying that this needs to be funded broadly, because we can't lead the charge, identify the children, and we've even identified some things that we've called interactive innovations for social development, for social capital. Like, what do we do to have early wins? How do we use churches, sororities, fraternities, service clubs to begin to infiltrate the schools and social service sectors to become more involved, more hands-on involvement in developing leaders? We're ready to do that, but that needs coordination. And so doing this work is historic, but what's going to be magical is the broader community, listeners, everyday residents, supporting this work, because we've got to raise the resources to have the team to implement what we have now planned.
And we leave it there. Reverend G, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Reverend Alexander G. Jr., founder of the Justified Anger Coalition. He was with us to talk about a plan for racial progress called our Madison Plan, released last Friday night.